Thank you, Mr. Taylor. This is John Philip Sousa, and I'm very glad to be here with my band, representing my own country, America, on this international program. When the Bond Bakers asked me to transcribe my voice and my band for this unique occasion, I was greatly honored because I realize, as Mr. Taylor has said, that some of the finest bands in the world have been engaged to play for you. I hope, however, that you will enjoy hearing me again as much as I always enjoy playing for you. I've been asked to begin with a march that is an old favorite of mine. Maybe you will recognize it.
Among America's greatest treasures is John Philip Sousa, the March King. The music of this beloved band leader and composer, whose most prolific period straddled the turn of the 20th century, it continues to fill hearts with a wave of national pride and patriotism. Sousa's The Stars and Stripes Forever is in fact the national march, and his creative medium, the marching band, has become an American institution. Welcome to Dead Wax 78s. I'm your host, Sean, and, you know, I'm a Canadian, but, you know, if you're an American, you know John Philip Sousa. So let's talk about him. John Philip Sousa was a child of European parents. His mother, Maria Elizabeth Trinkhaus, was born in Bavaria, and his father, John Antonio Sousa, was a Spanish immigrant of Portuguese parents. Sousa's parents were married in Brooklyn, New York, in 1848. 6 years later, they moved to Washington, D.C., where Mr. Sousa became a trombonist with the U.S. Marine Band. The Sousa's third child, John Philip, was born on November 6, 1854. Sousa's relationship to music was virtually inevitable. Sousa's natural talent, coupled with the stimulating environment in which he was raised, has caused historians to remark that his development as the prime example of a musical patriot was a natural one, and that he was obviously born at the right time and place in history. The stimulating environment was a musician's home just a stone's throw from the Marine barracks. The right time was the Civil War. At about age 6, Sousa attended a music conservatory for 4 years. He studied a number of instruments, including the trombone and alto horn, displayed an extraordinary talent at these. When he was 10, Sousa began attending his father's Marine Band rehearsals. It was also at this time that he became a witness to his country's torment, the Civil War years, which turned Washington into an armed camp. The proximity of the battles and the family's visits to the hospital to see the wounded were part of Sousa's childhood experience. Washington was buzzing with the chaotic sounds of war, and among these were military bands. In his autobiography, Marching Along, Sousa recounted, "There were bands galore. I loved all of them, good and bad alike." Sousa's first professional opportunity came in 1868 while studying harmony, composition, and violin. The 13-year-old was offered the position of band leader with a visiting circus. Sousa reflected, "And the more I thought of it, the more wonderful it seems to follow a life of the circus, make money, and become a band leader of a circus band myself. What a career that would be." His father didn't see it that way, though. The senior Sousa quickly took his son to the Marine Corps headquarters and had him sign up as an apprentice violinist. For a child with an obviously abundant imagination, the Marine Band must have been an acceptable substitute for the circus. Here's side one, John Philip Sousa's El Capitan, 1901.
El Capitan March, led by the Metropolitan Orchestra.
When he was 20, Sousa received a special discharge from the Marines and embarked on a career as a professional musician. He toured with two companies and a vaudeville show. He worked at two Philadelphia theaters. He taught music, composed operettas, and even corrected proofs at a publishing company. In 1879, Sousa conducted Gilbert and Sullivan's immensely popular HMS Pinafore. Under his masterful orchestration, the amateur company at his command was able to turn professional. Its success led to a season on Broadway where other famous composers took in Sousa's production. News of this young music director's accomplishments did not escape the attention of his former employer. In 1880, the 25-year-old Sousa was named the 14th leader of the U.S. Marine Band. He was the first American-born conductor and the one who would elevate the band to celebrity status. He shook the dust off the stale institution by replacing most of the music with his own, changing the instrumentation and improving the quality of the musicians. In the 12 years of Sousa's leadership, the Marine Band's reputation spread throughout the United States and even Europe. It became a highly polished ensemble with a colorful virtuoso at the helm. Though completely committed to his profession, Sousa was able to pursue a variety of interests. He was a devoted family man, a nature lover. He also enjoyed reading, horseback riding, trap shooting, and boxing. Sousa was a gentle, disciplined man, distinguished by his wit, his strict code of ethics, and a bottomless vigor. In his embroidered uniform hung with medals, behind his pince-nez glasses and his trademark mustache, wearing his white kid gloves and stirring emotion into the air with his gold-tipped baton, he cut quite a formidable figure. Here's side two, Semper Fidelis, Coldstream Guards, 1925.
Thank you.
Sousa led the Marine Band until 1892. He composed many exceptional pieces during this period, including the Washington Post for the celebrated newspaper of the same name. That march shot him into prominence and earned him the title of March King. The Marine Band recorded with the fledgling Columbia Phonograph Company and toured the U.S. and Europe followed. And in Europe, the Washington Post even spawned a popular dance called the Two-Step. When Sousa resigned from the military, he formed the Sousa Band, which enjoyed the unprecedented success. Impressive engagements and world tours were the norm until life was once again interrupted by war. In 1917, Sousa, then 62, re-enlisted, this time joining the U.S. Naval Reserve Force as America entered World War I. Lieutenant Sousa formed a huge musical battalion of over 300 members and marched across the country in tremendous parades that raised millions of dollars for the war effort. Sousa's recognition may largely compromise of his contributions to military band music, but it's not entirely limited to them. After the war, he developed a new passion for rights of musicians and composers. His insight and his visions, he founded the American Society of Composers, Authors, and Publishers, ASCAP, which is remembered as one of his most important contributions. Not only this, but the sousaphone, a large brass instrument similar to a helicon or a tuba, and is yet another one of his achievements. And it helped him leave an unforgettable mark upon band music. Furthermore, he also left behind a hefty number of songs, dance pieces, suites, and humoresques. Here's side three, John Philip Sousa, Washington Post March on a black wax cylinder.
Washington Post March, played by Sousa Band, Columbia Records.
Sousa held a very low opinion of the emerging recording industry. He derided recordings as a canned music, a reference to the early wax cylinders that came in a can, cardboard one, of course. He argued to the congressional hearing about that in 1906. He said, "These machines are going to ruin the artistic development of music in this country. When I was a boy, in front of every house in the summer evening, you could find young people together singing the songs of the day or even older songs. Today, you hear these infernal machines going night and day. We will not have a vocal cord left. The vocal cord will be eliminated by a process of evolution, as was the tale of a man when he came from the ape. Sousa's antiphony to recording was such that he did not conduct his band when it was being recorded. Nevertheless, the band made numerous recordings, the earliest being issued on cylinders by several companies, followed by many recordings on discs by Berliner Gramophone Company and its successor, the Victor Talking Machine Company. The Berliner recordings were conducted by Henry Higgs, one of Sousa's cornet soloists, and Arthur Pryor, Sousa's trombone soloist and assistant conductor. Sousa claimed that he had never been in the Gramophone Company's office in his life. Sousa did conduct a few of the Victor recordings, but most were conducted by many others. On his way to Reading, Pennsylvania, John Philip Sousa passed away from a heart attack on March 6, 1932, in his room at the Abraham Lincoln Hotel. The last piece that he conducted before his death was The Stars and Stripes Forever, which is one of his monumental or most renowned works, especially since it was declared the official national march of the U.S. This ultimately highlights the important place that Sousa holds in American society due to his talent as a composer and his patriotism. Each November 6th, the Marine Band performs Semper Fidelis at Sousa's grave. His house, Wildbank, has been designated as a National Historic Landmark, although it remains a private home and is not open to the public. Here's side four, Stars and Stripes Forever. While the world changed around him, Sousa had already earned his place in history. He had become highly honored and a cherished figure. The composer of 136 marches and hundreds of other arrangements, the author of several books and novels, the inventor of the sousaphone, never stopped working. So ended a rousing era of American history. Nonetheless, Sousa was one of the most decorated men of American music and was honored by many nations. A number of public places, structures, or even a warship have been named after him. And annual ceremonies are held in his memory all the time. Thank you for listening. It's been Deadwax 78. I'm your host, Sean, and yeah, I would go on to bet that anybody listening to this podcast has definitely heard a John Philip Sousa tune. And even on the flip side,